you there?
Good evening, everyone. It's Wednesday night, and this is a class that is investigating the book, The Hidden Work by E.J. Gold. We are on chapter 13 of that book, and this is the sixth class on that particular chapter. And fun will be had by all.
David, I am on the phone.
Thank you.
I'll take phone duty if you want me to.
Simon, are you on too?
I am on.
Okay. So either one of you can do it. And the idea is to try to convey anything that you think the people on the recording need to hear from the chat. Because the recording is something that they're going to hear later. People that aren't, sometimes can't make it and would like to hear it. Sometimes some very, very good conversation is going on in the chat, and then it's your job to translate it so it's on the archival recording. Okay?
I defer to Simon the Master.
Thank you. Simon the Magus. Okay.
No, I'm not. Well, okay. Okay.
But you're experienced at this.
Oh, he is.
So yeah, oh yeah. Gladly I'll do that. Just sit back and keep your eyes on the screen, Harry. I will be glad to steer the dog.
I wanted to thank, and I'm not sure if Path World is on. I know Shikoba is not going to be on tonight, but can you hold this card? Yeah, why don't you hold it up so people can see it. As indicated last week, there you go. Yeah, just tilt it one way or another so that
Aurora.
The other way. Okay, so this is a set of cards that Path World, I'm not sure if RC participated in that. Thank you, Ivan. And they made a few of these available to me. I passed them on to some of the people here with great gratitude. Great gratitude was expressed. Thank you very much for the effort. The key is reaching a little bit outside your comfort zone and doing something like that will definitely leave a memory, and it leaves a mark that is really, really good. Now, last time I heard is that they were willing, if people wanted a card or a couple of cards, my memory is correct, I think Pathworld says go ahead and send in, give them your email, or if you don't want to share your email, you can send it to me and I'll send it to them. You want to keep it private. So, and what's on the card, if you didn't see it, and if those on the recording, of course, didn't hear, because we didn't say it, is that they've produced a nice looking card, which is, what's the size of this card, Ivan?
It's 4x6.
It's a 4x6 card with a beautiful landscape image in dramatic colors. And on the card is Prayer Absolute, and Prayer Absolute is maybe the most important thing that is in this book called The Hidden Work. So this is what we're working with. They memorialized it. And this is something that you can carry with you all the time. Yes, and part of the effort is to memorize this prayer, but it also winds up being a reminding factor. When your hand reaches in your back pocket and you notice it there, or you open your purse and suddenly there it is, and you go, oh, that's right. And we have to... For a lot of the work we're doing, we have to really incorporate these reminding factors until something else occurs. Now, the something else occurs part is, in a certain way, almost so subtle that you don't notice it. Later on, there's another something that occurs that is unmitigated. It's it's life-changing. But what I'm talking about is just a sense of presence that changes such that you wind up, you're slightly more in the world of presence most of the time versus sitting in the world of the machine. Even if 50.0001% of the time, if you're in presence slightly more, something starts to happen. A very gradual amount of momentum starts at that time, and that momentum is something that we can feed on until it's just always there, and you're always walking around in a certain sense of wonder, that the wonder is like a cape that you possess and that you walk around in. It's that wonder that helps engender these kinds of spaces. But we forget. As Jenny used to say, you know, I love the doorway exercise, but I always forget. And then at a certain point, you don't forget. Because the meaning of that moment of transit, moving from, you understand that you're in one space and the doorway is the entry into not the other room or just the doorway, it's actually the transit point from one space to another. And when you understand that you've moved from one space into another, like two individuals just did, they move not through a doorway but into a different space, then you realize that something different is happening. So I want to mark moments of transit, and that's part of what our job is here, okay? We become not just members of the human race, but we've made a particular vow. We've incarnated on this planet at this time together. Everybody that is here has had the opportunity to incarnate and touch a school that has been made manifest by E.J. Gold and the students around him over the last 40 years in different forms. So we are here tonight, as a matter of fact. The individuals in this room, there's six or seven of us, and all the individuals in this room happen to be in this room at this moment for this particular event tonight. Part of that is whatever's going to unfold in the class, which is frightening in a certain way. Because as we move from the human into through the transit into the place called the essential self, there's a flutter in the human biological machine, which is a little nervous about that. It doesn't know. It kind of doesn't feel very comfortable as the ship moves through the waves, and you're not sure if you have your sea legs yet. But soon you get your sea legs, and then you realize once you've got those sea legs that you can go, you can be there. Not only can you be there, but you enjoy the voyage. And you enjoy the voyage of uncertainty, really. You know, I look at Ivan over there, and this guy is a poet in the true sense of the word. He's a poet. When his eyes open up, when he awakens his machine and he puts his effort into it, which is not always, but when he does, he sees the world poetically, because that's the only way to see the world when he stands in that place. And then he's compelled by his poetic nature to tell us about it.
There's often a lack of resolution involved.
And that's okay, because in these spaces, it's not a matter of coming to conclusion, it's a matter of presence. It's the practice of presence that we're talking about here, right? The practice of presence. And in the practice of presence, that's where we build one little more muscle. We build a little more muscle, and we have more muscle than we can lift 1 inch more than we could before. And we're going to explore that pretty heavily in the next chapter. I don't know what we're going to do in the next two chapters. I'm at a loss. But after that, we're going to take a break for a couple of weeks, and then we're going to get into an area. We are going to work with the American Book of the Dead, but we're going to work with it not as the Labyrinth Reader's Course, and we're not going to look at it as just how to do a reading. We're going to look at it in terms of a book that is a foundation piece just to help us explore two different things, the concept of death and dying. We're going to, Ivan and I spoke briefly about this a few weeks ago, and I think I've matured it a little bit, Ivan. We're going to speak a lot about the idea of death and dying. And in all the literature that you see about this, it's preparing for your death. What a strange idea. But we're going to explore that, okay? And I'm going to weave through that conversation. I'm going to bring in, there's going to be a number of books that we're going to look at. We're not going to, the American Book of the Dead is going to be our foundation piece, but we're going to bring in a number of other pieces of literature focused on that. And we're going to weave through this, and Molly Midway is going to help me bring in when to talk about different chambers. There's 49 chambers, but they're not static. Okay? It's not a linear thing in a certain way. And that, I'm going to need help on how and when to talk about it. I can be the voice, but sometimes I need a little, okay, guidance from now and then. But right now what we're talking about is moving into that place of transit, allowing ourselves to be in transit. Harry and his group last week, Tuesday, had an invocational dinner. And in the invocational dinner, they did a great deal of work that I think opened up their eyes. Is that about right, Harry?
Absolutely.
Now, when I say a phrase like that, I'm not trying to be inspirational. I'm also not trying to be a cheerleader. What's that word? Yeah.
Oh, enthusiastic.
I'm not trying to be enthusiastic or a cheerleader. I'm stating a fact. Okay. And for some reason, I mean, this particular chapter and where we are in the chapter doesn't lend itself. I'm so moved by the idea of epistemology. Epistemology is how we learn, okay? That's the philosophic area of focus called how do you know something? How does the human mind come to know something? And we're in a different mode now because we are in invocation. If you noticed about 4 minutes ago, there was a moment of transit. And that's when I started talking about that little fear flutter, that transit into this space. Now, I'm going to point something out that's very pragmatic. When you are in this space, I don't know if Aria is on. Okay. When you are
yes,
in
she
this,
is.
Thank you. When you are in this space, there's a capacity for more knowledge. Now, I do not mean linear knowledge here. I'm not talking about linearity. But it leaves a mark. Okay, it leaves a mark. I call it making a deposit in the essence bank. And maybe all we can do at our level is deposit a penny. One penny. We have all that work with pennies that everybody did, right? And so we can deposit a penny. Well, after a few deposits, you got some money in there maybe, right? You can play the game at that point. Then you can participate. You have enough to participate in. So the thing I'm pointing out is this idea of knowledge and disconnect from your normal concept of being smarter than type of knowledge. It's the form of knowledge that comes because you're in presence, right? Do it with you, but I won't. Come here for a quick second, Molly. Yeah, you would get it too. Okay, can you come into the? Can you see Molly at all?
Girl, scrunched down.
But I want you to kind of face me though too, but not in front of that camera. And so, just hold up your hand and just touch my hand if you're anything. Closer. Come in closer.
Okay.
And touch it.
Okay.
Now. Okay. Do you feel anything?
No.
You do?
Yeah.
That's a form of communication. Okay. That's a form of communication that is. And it's a form of knowledge that works in this particular kind of space. So I don't know why that came to me in chapter 13 here, which is about thought for food, right? But part of the reason was something that was inspired by a conversation I had with Silverdale, where he was, for him, okay, insistent for him, which is always very gentle, that we understand the fact that food has different aspects. So we talked about vegetables and stuff like that, but there's another kind of food, and that's the food that the human biological machine forms, right? And that we eat that as well, and that that's part of the food that we're talking about. And so part of the food that we're talking about is the food that comes from interactions like that, right? Okay, something flows, right? We get to know each other. Make sense? So that's part of what happens very in vocational dinner, that the individuals had an opportunity during that night to know each other in a different way. Does that make any sense to you?
Absolutely. That's exactly what happened. It was kind of like a sweeping energy that we allowed to bring us with it.
So the courage of allowing something to occur like that, and I'm speaking specifically to certain individuals, the courage to allow something to occur.
David, we debriefed last night, and we came to the conclusion that we got out of it pretty much what we were able to give up individually in that space. That
okay,
what
so
we
what,
brought to the space is what we got from it.
Hang on one second there, Harry. What does Harry mean? And anybody can answer, anybody on the phone or on the chat. What does Harry mean? We got out of it what we were willing to give up. What does he mean by that? Anybody know?
You get what you pay for.
Susan comes forth. Susan, congratulations. I got your message, by the way.
Well,
so are you going to help us with what Harry's mystery is here?
Well, Harry's saying that wherever you're vibrating, or you get back, whatever you are able to give, you get.
Whatever you are able to do back is part of what I think I heard Susan say. Anybody else? Anybody on the chat? Go ahead.
I could say that whatever you sacrifice, of the historical machine, personality, through the act of presence, is what you get back for the essential self in that blessing and for the absolute.
Did I hear you right when you said whatever you're willing to sacrifice from the what?
The HVM. The mechanicity of the machine through the act of presence in sacrifice for the absolute, you get back that sacrifice back, but for the essential self, not but for the machine.
So, once again, in this evening, individuals, and Harry,
yes.
Continue with your download about what did people say, how do they know that they got back what they gave up? Because somebody had to say something like, I was afraid to do this and this, but I did it anyway, right?
It was more like a giving up of preconceptions or expectations of what was going to happen versus just watching in silence to perceive what opened up. If
yeah.
that makes sense.
Yeah, so these are individuals that are willing, this flutter of fear, which I call, that's the stepping over the path, the DMZ, the demilitarized zone, into the other world. When you're willing to go over there, you so part of giving up the mechanicality, as Simon is saying, might be a specific thing where someone said, gosh, you know, I really like to be by myself when I eat. Somebody might say that. But I'm willing to give that up to be in this particular space with everybody. That would be might be an example. Another example is, I don't know what I'm giving up, but I'm willing to just be there, right? I can't do anything else, but I can be in this space. Sometimes that's all you can bring to the plate, right? I will be in the space with presence and attention. I mean, you're properly in the space. Go ahead, Harry.
Well, I pretty well summarized it. What I've already shared is that it wasn't so much an effort we made, it's that produced an awareness of something that was important, as was not trying to make it do something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to say that any better right now.
Mm-hmm. Could you say, like, surrendering social conventions, say having a dinner, not chattering, not socializing at a dinner, not interacting as if it were a dinner party and so on?
Well, we started off with the Toast of the Idiots. We had planned originally to do that at the end, but it
mm-hmm.
just seemed to flow naturally to do it at first. So everyone started drinking wine and eating bread and toasting their idiots, the parts of themselves that keep us tied to mechanical existence.
After
and, of course, there's abundant material to work with, so everybody loosened up.
After about the fifth or sixth glass of wine, it probably helped.
Well, we had small glasses, but we were pretty circumspect there. I was told not quite as much as I thought. But it did help. It loosened up things.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe what the Toast of the Idiots is, please?
Well, I can only describe what we did and what we thought it was. We all came to an agreement that it's pretty much some sort of a way of addressing the human biological machine's desire to dominate our lives. And so there are certain features that each of us have that everyone else can see but us. And it would be nice if we could identify them ourselves. And so by toasting them and making fun of them, it makes it okay to talk about your idiots. That's what they are, our little mechanical things. And so people started doing it, and once they figured everybody else was making a fool of themselves, well, then there's nothing to keep them from doing it either.
If you really want to have a good, like, if you pretend, for instance, that you wouldn't have anything to share, as in this Toast of the Idiots. One way around that is to listen to your recorded voice. It's dripping with stuff. And I'm forced to listen to it myself speak every week as I post the audio and stuff. So that's always a good way to do it.
So I should go back and listen to this.
Yeah, you should listen to it. We have a lot of commentary, but we'll allow you to go ahead and find those yourself.
I don't really have much else to say. It gave everyone permission to talk about foibles. We're working now through personal work on self again. And so
really? We're
on the second chapter, so everybody is observing mechanicalities, and I had asked everyone to note some so that we could toast them. And everybody did, and we did.
It's like a form of confession to me also, isn't it?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, I'm acknowledging that this is that I'm this kind of idiot.
Yeah.
This is like saying, okay, I'm the, complicated idiot.
Well, I've cheated. I've been confessing my idiots here in front of God and the whole universe through this television program that you guys do. So actually now I don't know if there's anything else there that can really frighten me that much now.
We haven't tried it with wine yet here.
Good, no. Yeah, well.
No, that's all right. I'm willing to do that.
Yeah, we'll be bringing wine next week. We'll probably bring a few tubs of wine in.
Actually, before
a few
you want
tubs.
To... Just footnote something you guys were talking about in regard to this invocational dinner reminded me, in the Passover Seder, there's a particular moment, there's a moment of opening, when an extra cup of wine is poured, there's a table for Elijah, who's the wandering Jew, the prophet, symbolism of it is, when Elijah comes back and sits down at your Passover Seder, it means that that the Messiah is coming next. It means that the end of day, the transformation of the world, the actual transfiguration or whatever is coming. In Jewish folklore. But anyway, you pour this cup of wine, you put it out for Elijah, and then there's a prayer that you say, and then someone goes, and I haven't always felt this so strongly, but someone goes to the door, and you open the door of the household. You're doing this, you're sitting around a dinner in a home, in the living room or a dining room. You open the door, and you said this prayer, and everybody waits and looks and says, so, and I know that just at Passover Seders, I've really felt how profound that moment is, because it is, it's actually happening there. It's like, I realize at the point, it doesn't matter that Elijah doesn't show up. He doesn't
That's
come.
Right.
He doesn't come, and you leave the wine there, and then you go on, then you sing songs, or you do whatever else is part of the Seder, the liturgy, the ritual and so on. But the fact is that just the fact that when you open that door and you're looking for Elijah, this is a dimensional shift.
Right.
This is like, you say like the doorway exercise when you go through the doorway. This doorway is, you're opening up this doorway for the magical, for this magical event to happen, which is that the prophet from all, outside of time, the wandering Jew, the announcer of the end times and the paradise is coming and all that, is you've opened the door for that to come into your Passover Seder or your invocational dinner. And I had this realization once or twice that this is adequate, like that's really the event, is not necessarily that you're disappointed that he didn't come, but that you've actually everybody together has turned towards this other dimension is really what it is.
Well,
he might show up.
The point is that if you're doing that properly, and the magnitude of that entity actually showing up is profound.
Yeah.
So if the participants in that event get themselves in a place where they're willing for that to occur, whether it occurs
or not, something has happened.
The
yeah.
effort of doing it
yeah.
is the prize itself.
Yeah, that's right.
Because at that moment, those individuals have actually surrendered within themselves to be in that space. If an entity of that magnitude actually showed up, it would shift something in everybody to another level. And I think we'll talk about that more in 14 and 15. But to be allowed, to be in a position where you're surrendered enough where you're going to allow that to occur is an enormous step in itself. And with that as a segue, one of the exercises that we had at the end of last week was for people to provide what are some prayers that people use for their before they do an invocational meal or a presence or something like that. And both Lost Horizon and Pianjo sent some prayers in. I'd like both of you to consider taking the effort to post those on the website. Okay?
Okay. I meant to do that too.
Is that something you
something.
Can do? And then Ivan will post something. And Harry, can you do that as well?
Yes, I'll be happy to do
that. I'm going to go ahead and read just a brief amount of those just so we can understand the mood that we're talking about. Okay, and so this one is, I'll read yours first then. This is the prayer that was said sometimes by one person, sometimes by all in unison, before meals at the Gurdjieff group that I used to attend, Dan Lost Horizon is telling us. And here is that prayer. All life is one, and everything that lives is holy. Plants, animals, and men, all must eat to live and nourish one another. We bless the lives that have died to give us our food. Let us eat joyfully together, resolving by our work to pay the debt of our existence. Amen.
Amen.
So that's a prayer.
Will you post that one, David?
Yeah, it'll be posted.
Okay, thank you.
And so that's something that somebody does, is that's a prayer that maybe in that particular group they use to open that up. And then Harry had a couple of them. I'm only going to read one of them. I'll read one of them, and then you'll post the other one on the site as well, Harry, okay? I'm going to read the second one that you put in there. From that point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men, let life descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men, may Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center, which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out. And may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. And then the last one I'm going to read is actually fairly common in the world of Buddhism, and this particular one is the way that that EJ has written it. But we're going to use it to actually segue into something else. But I'm going to go ahead and read it, and then I'm going to pose an issue, which I've done before. And this is also one that is often used, and I verified this with some of the Buddhists that I work with, that this is what they say or something close to it. And here that is, it's the Bodhisattva vow. Okay? The passions of delusion are inexhaustible. I vow to extinguish them all at once. The number of beings is endless. I vow to help save them all. The truth cannot be told, I vow to tell it. The way which cannot be followed is unattainable. I vow to attain it. this is one that I work with quite a bit. And how can it be? I mean, these are riddles that are impossible to answer, right? What does it mean?
Koans, I would say.
Koans, Ivan is saying, is that the passions of delusion are inexhaustible. And then the guy comes around and he says, I vow to extinguish them. Not I vow to extinguish them, but then all at once, who is this guy?
Mm-hmm.
What's he talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Ivan?
Got a flat foot there.
Ivan got a clock.
We
have an answer. One of the contestants has come to the microphone for an answer. Okay.
Here, for a mic.
Go ahead, speak into the mic.
The way that I work with that is
this is Tamara speaking.
No, they can't hear you. They can't hear you.
Okay. The way that I work with it is the understanding that there are three forms of food. The first is Hinayana, which you are working for your own effort. The second is in the benefit of the Bodhisattva concept first rises in you. And the third is the Vajrayana, where you understand that everyone else has already attained liberation. You are the last left, and all of this is being done for your benefit to help liberate you.
We really can't hear anything.
Oh,
they couldn't hear any of that. Well, then what you should do, Tamara, is post it on the website. She'll post it, Susan. Thank you for that.
This was her capsule, very good capsule of the three
lines of work.
Three branches of Buddhism traditionally. Yeah.
David, so, I also remember Tamara's two prayers that she shared with us.
Right.
God, help me, help me, help me. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yeah. So
that's great.
The idea there is that even if some of you, you know, on your way, the second the class ends, you're on your way over to McDonald's to get load up on a feed bag there, you know, if you say these prayers in a certain way before then, there's a transformational effect that occurs. And maybe other things will occur too, but certainly that. So the idea is that that's what we bring to the table. We can bring that to the table. We can bring these prayers to the table. And that's how we can participate in this activity of food, and these are our thoughts about it. Okay? So, Simon, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Have there been any comments on the chat log?
No, not really.
Nobody, okay.
It's really strange. Nobody's really posted anything.
Maybe it's possible that the whole thing has gone down and we don't know it.
I did like Arya's comment.
Arya had a comment?
Arya had two comments. She said, when we were talking about toasting the idiots, and she said it's kind of like confession, an admission, and acknowledgement. And she also says that it's not easy to have that courage.
Let's address that point, okay, that Arya has said. Basically, that when you're doing the toast of the idiots, it's a form of confession. And then it's not easy to do that. What was the second part?
No, it's not easy to do that. It takes courage.
It's not easy to have that courage.
This is why we take wine with it.
Wine helps him.
Yes. Wine helps
Harry. Well, you know, I think you should point out, David, that what Harry was describing, you know, saying that it was what we gave up. I mean, it's like we gave up various obstacles or barriers, let's say, to sharing this information among ourselves, let's say, about our machine behavior or whatever. It's not an ordinary, the whole idea is it's not an ordinary dinner. It strikes me, what struck me about what he was saying is that a big part of that, how to invoke that courage, you know, how to invoke the willingness or the ability, you know, to transcend, to go beyond your machine, is you have a safe space. The sacred, you know, if you've done everything to make this invocational dinner a sacred space, that is a safe space for the essence, for the essential self can now come forth. And, I mean, I don't know if that's courage, Arya, or not, but it seems to me that what happens in certain spaces, it just becomes trivial. It's sort of laughable, like what my machine, you know, how funny my machine is, or how hung up I am on certain obsessions, or what I can't stop eating, or whatever it is that I'm an idiot about.
I think along with that is the being in a group, as Harry described.
Yeah.
They were able to, as one person was able to have the courage to admit part of his idiot, it allowed other people to have the courage to go ahead and not only look at some stupid part of themselves, but admit it. And then there's a comment, Arya.
Yes.
That about the courage to let something happen. It's two different points.
But I don't get that.
Well, she was talking about the courage to let something happen.
Right.
As being two different points, I'm not sure.
Oh,
wait.
Meet that next statement of hers there, Susan.
I understand.
David was talking about the courage to hang out and be there to allow something to happen.
That's one thing.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, I think.
Okay. There's... there's another element to this. Okay, it's very important what Ivan was talking about. In the invocational space, particularly with a group, particularly in a group like that, that I've never been to Harry's group, I hope to do that this summer, but I guarantee that a safe space has been engendered. What do I mean by that? What I mean by that is that the essential self understands that its freedom of expression to be there and be mobile is okay. It's okay to do that. That the human biological machine traditional elements will not dominate. We have to be aware of the fact, we have to know where we're at. We have to use our, what's the thing in the car? Where you know where you are? GPS. Global Positioning Signal, satellite. We have to know where you are. More importantly, it's important to know when you're moving from one space to another. It's important to know that because if you don't, you'll be jangled by going from a more essential space to a less essential space. But if you know you're going to do that, you can move and glide into it more elegantly. So that's one thing, is understanding transit like that. Okay, so Ivan was talking about this idea of being in a safe space. I want to unpack that. And we're going to unpack it, and we're going to leave a couple of things open that we won't get to until next week. Thought we'd be done with chapter 13.
We're getting close.
Well, we have a few paragraphs, but they're pretty important. But I want to unpack what he's talking about. When he says it's a safe space, and then these things of the machine are trivial, right? So that's a place, and Harry, this might be something you can share with the group, okay?
Okay.
When you are in that space and you perform what I call it an act of confession in the group, two things occur. One is the actual act of doing that, and as Ari is telling us, that's a moment of courage that comes forth for you to do that. But this is something else, and actually, Silverdale, I'm asking you a little bit of a question here too. This is something else, is that when you confess in that space, it's almost as if you're putting the machine on notice. Machine's there too, right? Because you hauled it along to get to the space.
Sure. You might have pacified
it with
some wine.
It's pacified by attention and presence. Mm-hmm. Wine is another thing. But it's pacified by attention and presence, but the machine is nevertheless there. And it's actually from that vantage point, so you can say at the moment, you're putting the machine on notice and you're saying, this I confess to. That is secondary to where I live. That's an act of will at that point, that the essential self is acting at that point and saying to the machine, beyond notice, I see you. And I am not that. You're going to get to that chapter, Harry, in Practical Work on Self.
Right. It's interesting that their law stone here is saying, if I remember right, idios means particularity in Greek, like idiosyncrasy. It also means, I would add, that I make it myself. I make myself.
You are making yourself. You're recreating yourself in a certain way. And what Tamara was saying is, doesn't that also start to engender compassion, right? Did you say compassion? Is that the word you used? And now, there's two parts to that compassion, there's several parts. So one is you have compassion for others, right? You see them and you have compassion for them and you go, oh yeah, I mean, so, you know, you tend to like to do that despicable act when you're by yourself eating and you're going to give it up for this event. How nice. But you have compassion for the individual and what they go through to do that. But you also have compassion for the way that your specific machine works. And you just, like, you know, I've said this story a number of times where you know, there's certain things that I've noticed in my machine over the years that I don't need anymore, but I'm thankful that it got me to the place I am, because I'm right here right now and this is the work I should be doing, and I'm doing that work, right? So I'm glad that I had that characteristic and that machine behavior, because here's where it wound me up, right?
True.
And I'm getting the big bucks for doing this show, obviously.
Right.
So
this is a big time.
This is time. I'm the big. Ivan says I'm in the big time. I listen to him. He's my agent.
Yeah, I'm his agent.
So
just sign the
bottom line. There's a form of compassion that comes forth. Now, there's another element to this and this is why I wanted to unpack it. And this part's not that comfortable. In a space like that, and I've been in many of them, where we do a sharing like that, and some of them far more intense, where there's, you know, you've been in them where, you know, either you or I are the focus of a particular something, and there's an entire community focusing on what they claim is my weakness. Oh, well.
Right. That's what they claim.
That's what they claim. Okay. And you go into it for a few hours and unpack some of the stuff, and you begin to see how that individual works, and you begin to see something come forth. Now, at the reason, and this is a form of courage, Aria, it is a form of courage. The reason you can look at something intense Susan, something that is so dark and so intense, because, and the only reason you can do it is because at the same moment you can see the other. You can see the other world. You can see the heavenly world at the same moment. Make sense? Okay? And you, because you can see both of them, because you can stand in the heat of the heat of the cleansing radiation, then you're able to bring this other thing out. But you're able to bring the other thing out, and then when you bring it out, if at the same moment you can begin to see these, this other, and so it's this dance between the two that allows a particular kind of cleansing to take place. The cleansing radiation is an absolute cleansing. There's nothing, I mean, you know, there's no in-between. It's just, right? I mean, you know, it's just like, it is a cleansing radiation.
Is anything like giving up all of illusions all at once?
Well, you it's a non-issue. Illusion is a non-issue while that's occurring. So if you can stay in the space and then at the same time see something that has so profoundly captured you. So it's this balancing act. It's a juggling act. It's a divine juggling act between these two worlds. And Silverdale is trying to help us understand the fact that that's our food. That's the food that we eat. Because once you consume that from the point of view of the essential self, give it up at that time. And you can go, and you'll see this in one of the chapters you're going to be coming up to, I am not that. And you can begin to declare, I am not that. Because you begin to see that I am a divine, angelic being that is settled here. And if I am that, then I'm just carrying this along, right? I mean, here's all these individuals in here. Everybody picked a different body. That's strange, you know?
Maybe.
Go ahead.
I'm going to bring a comment just regarding and continue with Pianju was saying. This is from Lost Horizon. It says, also the word idiot, as it is used in this context, does not necessarily imply stupidity, but particularity. It's about self-knowledge rather than judgment.
Yes.
Aurea continues, the toast of the idiots is like an acknowledgement and recognition of the ego and a sort of cleansing and getting out of your way before the food. Like confession before the Eucharist.
Before the what?
Eucharist.
Confession.
Eucharist.
Eucharist. Sorry, thanks.
Got it. Yeah, and that's something that we didn't cover. We did not cover, though I did cover with a couple of others, is that in the Catholic Church, when you take communion, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, the Eucharist and the blessing of the Eucharist and the transubstantiation. But you cannot, you're not allowed to take communion without going to confession first. You must confess your sins, whatever you're willing to tell the priest at that time. And at that point, don't forget, this individual is an emissary of the divine. That's what it's supposed to be. And you then, in the act of confessing it, if it's a true confession, you are then absolved. But of course, this doesn't have to do with because it's the Catholic Church or because they have the power to do it. It has to do with the fine effort of actual confession, that if one gets to the moment of confession, it is complete in itself. Now, sometimes the confession, though I don't believe it fully, sometimes a confession can be, and the Jews allow this in repentance, the concept of repentance of
the Day of Atonement.
Well, leading up to the Day of Atonement.
Yom Kippur is the Day of Atonement.
Yeah, and in repentance in that regard, some say that you can even just speak it out loud by yourself. I think that's okay. I think that's important to do. But there's some elements that must be confessed to another, in my opinion. And only then are they complete. And we're only able and only have the strength to do that if we can see both worlds at the same time. You have to, because some of this stuff, I'll just tell you the experience I had recently. I was just with a very, very strong group up in Seattle, and the teacher there was working directly with this individual who had a profound problem with, I mean, you know, I say profound, but it's within with her relationships and all of the confusion that she brings to that, right? But he was able to get her to like see her ego in it too, right? Was, oh yeah, she's all confused. It's because she had ego in it. She had her power, her manipulation, all of that stuff. That is the part she didn't want to give up. Because there's power there, right?
Mm-hmm.
But to see the weakness in that, and I spoke to her extensively about it, but I also spoke to the teacher too, and he said, yeah, I brought her to see that, and at the same time I showed her the divine love. That was specific work with that individual. And it's that balancing act, Harry, that I think you were beginning in the Toast of the Idiots with your group there. It's the safe place, as Ivan is telling us, allowed some of that to occur. I don't know how it got off on all this. Go ahead. Can you repeat that?
Dan is saying for the invocational dinner, the whole physical preparation is the foundation. Just physical food, it stays at that level. Something else has to be introduced to bring it to the next step.
I think everybody having a role in preparation of that space also made a huge difference, because
right.
Then everyone has ownership of their contribution to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dan is also saying that you're preparing the food to feed the essence rather than the machine. Part of the meal is feeding the essence rather than simply feeding the machine.
Right.
You're introducing another octave to the physical food. You're going back
correct.
To the chapter on octaves. Yeah, you go, you provide as a group, working together, you provide what we call a shock, I guess, in this tradition. You provide some energy jump that brings it in, that enables the group to go into a different octave or the activity. Yeah, I was calling that more simply, I guess, saying to make it a sacred space, you know, to invoke the sacredness of the space and to make it other than ordinary dinner, other than an ordinary utensils, and other than ordinary food, and other than ordinary time.
Right.
So on.
David, by the way, the group all decided that they would like to do this at least 3 times a year.
Okay. That's good. That's good.
It was a request from everyone.
Excellent. So part of our work here as little emissaries that we are, and part of the work, Harry, for your group, is to also record what they're doing. I don't mean to necessarily take a video camera or whatever, or audio, but to, in a sense, write down, maybe in a journal, a group journal that says, here's what occurred. Then 6 months later or 4 months later when you read it, you go, oh, wow. And if you do that for a couple of years and you start reading it, you're going to start reading a story that's quite interesting and magical for you. Okay?
Agreed. So actually, I think that's an excellent idea.
Yeah, and have somebody, if someone was a scribe last night when you were doing the post-mortem, if someone was a scribe, take those notes and memorialize them somewhere.
Yeah, put everybody can go to work and start recording some things.
Yeah, actually writing it down for others that will come after you too. Okay?
Interesting idea.
Yeah. I'm going to spend 5 minutes on another topic, and then we're going to finish the chapter possibly next week.
Okay.
But the topic I wanted to introduce, and it was something I said in the email that I sent out to everybody. Do you get the email?
No.
Do you have email?
Yes.
You do? Make sure I get your email address. I'll add you to the thing. You get it, right? Is the, I mentioned the term contamination. Now, this is a delicate area for many of us. Well, what is contamination? I'm just going to, at this point, all I'm going to mention about it is on a very gross level. I mean, very materialistic level, okay? And that's just the care and handling of your own food. You know, you've heard all the jokes about, you know, like, what is it, the 5-second rule or something like that. Like, you know, if you have your hot dog and it falls on the floor, if you pick it up within 5 seconds, it's still okay to eat, right? No, it isn't. Okay, so that's one form of it, is like, and, you know, you go to, let's say you go out to eat or something like that, you go to buy food somewhere, and you want them to be clean, right? Well, let's assume that they are somewhat clean. And then you just, your hands, which you've used to grab your money, and you drive your car and open the public door to get into the place, and then you just use your hand to pick up and eat the food. Oops. Take a little bit of effort to do what I just call just public health issues, okay?
Sure.
Like when you walk in and out of a door, that door has been touched by 8 million people. Some of them have placed their hands in places that you would not want to place your hand. So be aware of that. When you go down the escalator, and you go down the escalator and then you hold on to the thing, right? The railing, the moving railing. Well, so did everybody else on the planet. Or the subway, you know. And you know, just be careful.
And the microphone you're holding.
Well, yeah, but I know where this microphone's been, too.
Look how relaxed you are.
I am relaxed. And so when we go into public, just know that we're in a different realm then, okay? So just watch some of those activities that you do when you go into buy public food, when you go into a public washroom, pay a little extra attention at those times. We'll get into this in much more detail at another time, but I just thought I wanted to introduce the topic. Okay?
big contamination topic.
Yeah, it's enormous.
Maybe we should, between books, we should spend a couple of weeks doing a contamination talk and then get into the ABD and spend 2 to 3 weeks and really tackle it.
We can do it.
We could read some talk of the
David, what about essence contamination?
Well, that's where it will wind up, Harry. That's where it
that's
will
what
wind
up.
It will that's wind up there. Ivan?
That's an interesting question.
Ivan, do we have a talk on contamination
Absolutely.
Anywhere?
Yeah,
we
there's,
do.
There's a talk of the month.
Yeah,
so,
there is.
So where do you go? Talkofthemonth.com?
Yeah.
Talkofthemonth.com. And you can download it. And it's worth downloading and reading, okay? So take a look at it and begin. This is something that Vadir and Pathworld, I don't think you addressed that in your summary, but I wanted to make sure that we touched on it before this particular cycle is on. We might get into a little bit more next time, but next time we're going to address the last 4 paragraphs of the book, of this particular
chapter.
And for some reason, starts talking about the oracle.
Yeah, the Delphic oracle.
Yeah, but we're talking about food, ham and eggs, right?
Mm.
But anyway, somehow we wind up there, and there's a very specific reason. But we'll address that. We'll address that next week when we get closer to the end of chapter 13 in our work here on The Hidden Work by E.J. Gold. So thank you all for coming tonight, and I'll look forward to seeing you next week at the same time.
Yeah, let's, hey, keep Harry on the phone.